It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And he is sitting right here beside me this week. And we're both just kind of trying to thaw out our knuckles from the trip in from the car. This one's cold.
I didn't find it too bad today. The thermometer said 35 when I left the house, but it's feeling much warmer than that here.
I didn't think so. I'm getting old.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
75 is a good temperature now. Anyway, complain.
You like
complain,
the temperature
complain, right?
To match your age?
Yeah, exactly. Well, getting there. what can I say? All right, for all of the regulars, this is really a show about money, and you know that. And thanks for always being here. We're just about to complete year number 9.
Mm-hmm.
By my count, we have one more show after today, and then we'll be starting in on year number 10 of the show. How that's possible, just beyond my comprehension. Worthy of some clap. Okay. Anyway, if you're new to the show, we will be getting into money topics, believe me, and some of them will be quite a little fun after what the market gave us toward the tail end of this week, so we'll have Adam get into that very shortly. Meanwhile, as you know, silly season is here. The whole infrastructure of the Republican and Democrat Party are telling you pretty much everything you want to hear, depending on who you are. So one of the things I'm going to cover today is the current reiteration, or the current iteration, I guess, of the big lie that we're hearing. And I'll show you how it's done. And this one, I guess I'm really getting old, because I get irritated easier now when people pull such dramatic lies and sell them to the public, and the media will not pounce on them. And even it's so bad, if you get 3 Pinocchios from the Washington Post and you're a Democrat, this is the big lie. That's what happened this week, and I'm going to tell you all about it after we get into things a little bit. We will have a trivia question after the break and that sort of thing. But because it's so much fun this week, let's talk about what happened in the market.
Yeah, it was a short week due to the MLK holiday, and the first part of the week was not great. It wasn't terrible. We did see some big intraday drops and then some buying into the close that sort of wiped those off. But the second half of the week was fantastic, and specifically Friday afternoon was really, really strong. And the S&P 500 managed to take out its previous record from January of 2022. That happened on Friday, and it was 512 days after the previous record was set. It wasn't the longest streak on record, but it was the longest since the financial crisis, and that one lasted 1,375 days, so more than twice as long.
A long way to come back.
That is true. The performance of the market after, some people think like, oh no, the market's at an all-time high, I can't buy anymore. And the reality is, it's the exact opposite. The performance of the market after events like this, when you see an all-time high after a long period of not seeing one, it's actually better than average on a 1, 3, 6, and 12-month basis. So it's actually a really bullish sign for the market to see those all-time highs be taken out.
Another thing that makes me feel better at times like that, just find an inflation calculator and see what the real high has to be.
Yeah, that's true, especially after what we've seen in the last few years with the incredibly high inflation. So there is something to be said about that, but that's not really how people measure it on a day-to-day basis. So just seeing the new all-time high was pretty exciting, I thought. And you should be excited for your portfolio as well, according to historical data. The theory is also that there is some pent-up demand for stocks after a period like this. And we do know there's a huge pile of cash sitting in money market funds on the sideline right now, just kind of waiting to get in the market. Maybe this is the catalyst that makes that happen. And there was a two-month period at the end of last year where we really saw the breadth of the market improve, and that just means it wasn't just the 7 mega-cap stocks that were driving the market higher. It was pretty much everything at the last for the last 2 months of the year. Well, that sort of reversed back to the old trend of the mega-caps driving everything. This last couple of weeks. So far, 2024, you're seeing a lot more movement at the large end of the cap scale than at the small end. So you saw the Dow end the week 0.7% higher. The S&P was up 1.2 and the NASDAQ up 2.3. For the year, the Dow is now up 0.5%, the NASDAQ 2%, and the S&P 1.5%. So you can see that most of that gain came in this last week.
We've had, what, 13 trading days?
Yeah, that's right.
And you get this kind of number? That's a good start.
It is a good start. Not that it will necessarily last.
Continuously,
but you never know. Outside of the major indexes, performance is a lot more mixed. The Russell 2000 small cap index is down 4.1% this year. So you can see there's definitely some discrepancy between large and small cap. The S&P 500 growth index is up 3.3% this year, but the value index is actually down 0.6%. Within the S&P, the technology sector is up 4%, while the energy sector is down 4.4%. Five sectors in the S&P are up, while five sectors are down year to date. So really, really, you have to be invested right to take advantage of this market so far this year. Outside of the U.S., the All World Index is down 2.5%. The Emerging Markets Index is down 4.5%, but that should have an asterisk on it because it's being dragged down by China and Hong Kong, which are off 5.4% and 9.3% respectively. 9.3% to start a year is not in 3 weeks is not good performance.
That's ugly.
Brazil is off 5.7%. Australia and Mexico are off more than 4%. The UK, Spain, and France are all off more than 3%, while Japan is up 2.7% and India is up 1.6%. Internationally, it was actually kind of hard to find markets that were up this year. So not a great start for the world markets this year. After dropping late last year, oil is up 3.3% this year. Natural gas is up 2.6%, while gold is down 1.7%, and silver is down 5.1% this year already. Pretty crazy. Interest rates climbing again have driven down the bond market by about 1.2% to start the year. Sorry, I was having trouble reading my notes. Long treasuries are off about 4.8% to start this year. So interest rates have really spiked after coming down a good amount in the fourth quarter last year. In economic news, I have a really tough one to try and explain. The Empire Manufacturing Report, which covers New York and the surrounding areas, was forecast to come in at -5, which wouldn't have been great, but not anything to get too worried about. Instead, it came in at a -43.7. There's only one reading in the history of that report that's lower, and that was in May of 2020, right at the height of the COVID pandemic. Now, that made sense. This one does not. What happened in New York last month? Nothing could be this dramatic. This has to be an error in the report, I think,
the
data.
We'll give that a little more talk and see what we can dig up out of the weeds when we get back. But right now, we need to take a quick break, and I'll correct something I said last week. And we'll get into the new stuff again. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are aware that our microphones are sounding a little dull today. I don't know if it's coming through on the other end that way or not. But believe me, we're not. We're fired up as always on a Saturday morning. It occurred to me on the way home last week, and I was reminded again upon arrival that I forgot to give the answer to the trivia question. What percent of young people in the financial service industry got there on purpose? And the answer to that is 39%. 61% of young people working in financial services had no intent to work in financial services.
That actually makes sense.
It does, and it's sad. And we've talked about this a number of times. How many people encourage people to go into their business, though it would create competition? And we are some because we know that what we do and how we do it is important to people, and there just aren't enough out there. American CFPs have now approached 99,000. And when you think about it, that's not a big deal. When you think about the average age of those who are in it and thinking retirement, then you realize that there's a lot of room in here. So I've told people over and over, if you have a kid or a friend or even if it's you, you got to like three things. You got to like numbers, you got to like money, and you got to like people. And if you like all those things, it is a fabulous way to make a living doing good while doing well. Don't go in it to get rich because you'll do it wrong. But I'll tell you, you can make a darn fine living in a very, very comfortable occupation, and there's just so much to learn. So that was my point. Now, this week's question, brought to you as usual by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. What was the first U.S. state to implement a sales tax? And if you happen to know the year, that's fine. Otherwise, I'll give it to you. But just which state was the first to implement a sales tax? And as usual, I have a point. All right, back to the market. I don't even know what to say about it. I would say the finish was unexpected to me.
I don't know about that. I don't know that I had an expectation for the market. I did expect that the beginning of the year would be a bit choppy. After a fourth quarter like that, you just have to expect people are going to take some profits. It's almost inevitable. We saw that all three indexes were, they were up, all up over 11% in the fourth quarter of last year. That's incredible.
It is.
You can't, also not sustainable.
Right, there's that.
You can't go up 11% a quarter forever. I wish, but yeah, no.
Still got a ways to go on the NASDAQ.
Yeah. You said you had some more to mention about the Empire Manufacturing Report.
Well, I can't figure it out.
Nor can I.
We've been talking a little bit in the office this week that it's possible this is some kind of an outlier. I reminded people this week of one time when the initial jobless claims were so far out of whack, it almost had to be a mistake. And then come Monday, they announced that, California was late reporting, so it didn't get put in the numbers this week. Now, is it something stupid like that? I don't know. Was it a snowstorm that shut down something? I don't know. I can't take it with much more than a grain of salt because it is so whacked out. But if it repeats, we got to talk about this whole recession thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't think one report out of New York can define a recession or even
not yet
be the bell, you know, ringing that signals it.
I didn't see any confirming numbers from like Chicago or anything to do.
No,
that actually looked pretty.
No, it was definitely a one off. So I to me that points to a mistake or an error in the data.
So our recession predictions remain as they have been for the last year or better. Confused.
Yeah, I keep telling people it's tough to have a recession when you have full employment and retail sales that have been up. Actually beat expectations 6 months in a row, and the consumer is still out spending money that they're earning at their jobs. And
that's, I have hard evidence in my left hand right here that's not happening. Janet Yellen declared that the economy has achieved the soft landing.
I don't know about that.
I was just thinking everybody should breathe a sigh of relief now.
Yeah. I think that there still is a possibility of a recession sometime this year. I do think that under the current conditions, it would be a pretty mild recession. I just don't see it. How do you have a hard recession when everyone's working and outspending money? It doesn't make sense.
It does not.
We also saw a pretty nice uptick in the housing data that had a lot to do with mortgage rates dropping from almost 8% down to 6.5% or so. But home builder sentiment, housing starts, and building permits all came in better than expected. And then existing home sales were met expectations. Mortgage applications were up 10% last week. That's the largest weekly gain in over a year. And inventories are creeping up, too. They're at the highest level since 2020. So there's more available options for home buyers for the first time in what feels like forever.
Yeah. Angela and Susan were discussing on their show as I was driving in that the historical norm for a mortgage rate was about 7.7, and mm-hmm. right now we're at about 6.6. And you know, that better than average makes a difference, but we all are subject to recency bias. Mm-hmm. And our recency bias was you get a 3-4% mortgage and live happily ever after. But my thought on that was, if you really want to get in now and rates are tolerable but not great, look into an ARM, a 3-5 or 7-year ARM. Because one thing you know about rates, they move. They can move up, they can move down. The second it gets down again to a reasonable level, you can refi. Yeah, you carry a little risk, interest rate risk, but they'll define what that risk is on an ARM by saying in any 1 year it can't go up more than X amount. So if you're looking to get in, and that interest rate from an ARM will make a difference in the affordability of a place, check into it. Just a thought.
Yeah, not a bad idea. But you can also get a 30 and refi it with rates drop by mm-hmm. a point or better. That's another option.
Yeah, there's more ways to skin that cat than you might think.
Yeah, I think the really good news in all of this is that inventories are rising. Inventories have been so tight that people have been forced to buy things that they weren't really pleased with, and that's never a good situation. Yeah. I'd rather pay a really high mortgage rate or get into a higher mortgage rate on a perfect house and then refi it down than buy something that I wasn't really enthused about with the plan on, because you these transaction costs on houses are outrageous.
Yeah,
so
every state gets you somehow, and Florida yeah. really gets you.
They do
on the
and
on
so
the housing transaction.
I'd rather buy once, cry once, and then refi down. And at least now people have a better chance of that happening with more inventory on the market.
Yeah, and the other thing, we need a better stock, so the builders have to keep building. Let's go. Good morning, Leroy.
Good morning. How are you folks doing today?
Aside from cold, very well, thank you.
Well, you're at the beach. It can't be that terribly cold, is it?
Well, there's a discrepancy of opinion in this room.
Yeah. We're also in
called the thermometer.
We're at the station now, so it's a little colder here than it was
yeah,
out there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. What do you think?
Well, I'm chilly like everybody else is, but I think we got one more chilly night, and then the rest yeah. looks like it's pretty smooth sailing for the next 10 days.
I saw like some that. Numbers that start with 7 for next week.
Nice. Yeah, that'd be great.
Oh, wouldn't it? We don't get enough of those yes. days, in my opinion.
I know it. Well, I'm going to take a stab at your trivia question. What
sure.
was the question again?
What state was the first in the country to implement a sales tax?
The sales tax?
Yes.
That was West Virginia in 1921.
Now, that is not what I got. And I'll tell you my source, and we can check this out.
Do you have Pennsylvania?
Nope.
200 years ago?
Nope. I'm reading Stephen Moore's excellent book called Taxes Have Consequences. And I pulled this out of the middle of that book just yesterday, I think it was. And he says
okay.
it was Mississippi in 1930. Now, we'll do some fact checking on that stuff. What's your source? Just internet search in general?
Just looked at the internet. And they did mention, back at 200 years ago, it was a mercantile tax that was in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, just did a quick Google search.
But the sales tax that said it was the first one was 1921, and that was West Virginia.
Yeah, that's what I have as well. So okay. I wonder.
Well, Mr. Moore and I will have to have a little discussion since you.
That's fine.
But since that's Adam fine. Has corroborated
you guys
what you
have
say,
all the numbers.
Pardon?
You guys have all the numbers. You can make them work.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
That's right.
But we'll just chalk this one up to a winner. And my point, I always say I do have one, is that you would have thought this would be the brainchild of a place like New York or Massachusetts or
yes.
California or something like that. And it wasn't. It came out of the rural environment. And I'm not really sure why. But if you want a really good look at the truth behind the 20s and the 30s and the 40s, this book is outstanding. I'm not quite
and
done with it yet.
Book?
Taxes have consequences.
Okay.
And if you ever want to dispel the myth that is FDR and the presidency, there's no better way I've found to do it.
Well, that's great. I'll have to read that.
Highly recommended. I love the guy anyway, and he's really come through again on this one. So a little encouragement might help his sales by 2 or 3 books. You never know.
Okay.
All right. Good to hear from you. Thanks, Leroy, and we'll take
right.
care of you. I thought that was kind of a unique thing when I read it. I asked Adam before the show too about what he would think. He came up with the logical answer, New York or Massachusetts, and it wasn't. And I'm not far enough into the book yet to understand what the reasoning was behind that exactly, but it's somewhere in that area. All right, we've got to be pretty close to break time here. Thomas in there looking like, yeah, we can chat a little bit. But that's okay. I don't want to do too much right now because when we come back, I want to get into the big lie. But I also have a couple of, you know how much I like to say, this is your government working for you again. This one, 74,000 people Biden has relieved their student debts again in the direct face of a Supreme Court decision a long time ago that says he doesn't have the power to do that. And yet he's picking away and picking away thousands of people at a time doing it. Where is the loyal opposition on this? There's got to be a way to stop this nonsense, my opinion. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll be right back. But don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have a few little details here and there on things, and I want to get into the big lie. I want to mention that there's a House panel that is now trying to implement some changes to Social Security. This is such a typical thing, the kind of thing that really drives me insane. It says, House panel advances bill to fast-track Social Security cuts. Now, if you want to rile up the natives, especially those of us who are of a certain age, all you got to do is point your finger at somebody and say, they're going to cut Social Security. Everyone with a quarter of a brain, a television, and an internet knows that if they don't fix this thing and fix it soon, everybody's going to take a big old haircut, including current and future recipients of somewhere in the 23% range. And yet no one will do it because of things like this. They're going to fast track Social Security cuts. And I'm going to name a name right now. Nancy Altman. You've never heard of her? You shouldn't probably have. She's the president of Social Security Works, and she is a whacked out leftist who would rather see the system go broke, apparently, than to make any change in it. Or, of course, her version of the big fix, tax the rich. And I get so tired of all of this stuff over and over and over again. We need practical fixes to practical problems. Moving right along, I don't know how many of you heard it this week, but Joe Biden came out in his usual campaign mode, I guess you'd say, and announced that billionaires only pay about 8% tax rate. Now, you probably understand that there is no way under the U.S. tax code that a billionaire, high income, high asset person, can get away with 8% except jail time. That would be the consequence.
Well, your asset level really wouldn't matter. Only what your
A lot of the assets spin off money.
Right, the only but, reason that's, I brought it but up. That's income.
And that's what they like to call the billionaire class. Anyway, they use assets to design who this would apply to. But we're of course, supposed to be insanely jealous of these people only paying 8%. So they've been, of course, lying about this for a long, long time. And on Thursday, Larry Kudlow, a lot of people know who he is. He's one of my favorites. He does a 4 o'clock show right as the market closes on Fox Business Network, and I generally record it. And frequently, I'll take a few minutes sometime during the evening or the day and play back his monologue part, because he's always got good information. He served in the White House on the economics team under Trump, and he's been in the field since Reagan or B. before. He's knowledgeable and insightful and so on, and of course very conservative. But he's also one of the most practical people I think I've ever listened to. So I like keeping track of what he's thinking and saying, and I get some free information from him. So on Thursday, he did a little piece. This was after Biden came up and did the 8% thing, and I got a little insight in it. So here's some things. Now, this goes back a few weeks when Adam and I first started talking about, I'll bet your investments did better in 2023 than you thought they would. And even when you see the numbers, most people still don't feel like, oh, well, gee, that was a great year. Things are fine. It doesn't feel good out there. And it hasn't felt good out there for quite some time. I would say pretty much since COVID came, it hasn't felt real good. The markets performed very well. And, of course, the administration wants to take all the credit they can. So one of the first claims Biden made this week is that they've created 15 million jobs.
No.
Here's the numbers. In February of 2020, the month before they announced COVID, there were 152 million Americans working. Today, there are 157 million Americans working. Now, that's 5 million, not 15. The others were replacement for jobs that COVID took away.
No, the government took away by shutting
down.
Well, that's
true, by shutting us down.
COVID did not take anything. It was our response to COVID that did it.
That's absolutely true and a very good point. So, you know, the administration is claiming also that they're averaging 130,000 new jobs per month. That's half a story. Under the prior administration, they averaged 170,000. So it's down 40,000 a month under this administration. They also say that the inflation is down, so prices are falling. Now, they are not the same thing. Overall, prices are up 17% across the board, and they're still rising. They are not falling. Always have to predicate that with, yes, certain commodities do rise and fall in price. We know that, gasoline, oil, gold, silver, that kind of thing.
Mainly natural gas.
Yes, especially. You put the capital V on volatility on that one.
Yeah.
But they are contending that corporations are awful because they're not lowering prices in response to reduced inflation level. Well, that just clearly is a lie. Adding on to that, it's much worse. The things we have to buy repeatedly, food and gasoline, are much higher than the 17%. They used this morning on Fox, they used a classic example, and I'm not sure what part of the country this was, but a bean burrito in 2012 at Taco Bell was $1.30. And 12 years later, 2024, it's $3.69.
Yeah, the fast food is outrageous now. It's really crazy. If you take five people, two adults and three kids to go eat at a fast food restaurant and spend under $45, I would be shocked.
Yeah, we've all been hearing about the Big Mac meal for $18, things like that.
Yeah, it's true. It's crazy.
I remember when it was before we moved here, and we used to come down here quite a bit. We'd drive with the kids. One particular place that we used to stay once in a while was right next to a Taco Bell.
I remember.
And Adam would go in there, you start with a dozen of this and 10 of those, and 3 of those, and I'd walk out. I got a lot of change back from a 50 in those days, a lot of change. Today, I don't know what that would be.
No,
I would hesitate to guess.
It would be over $50 for sure.
Oh, yeah, probably pushing 100.
It's crazy. We got ice cream last night we had a friend, one of the kids' friends with us. It was $36. For a round of ice creams.
I'm flabbergasted.
Yeah.
And the only thing that supports that is the price of groceries. You're not going to save 80% by going to Publix instead of going to McDonald's. You can save a lot if you do it right. We're pretty careful. But how in the heck do people line up at these places to pay that kind of prices?
They're everywhere is full.
I know one thing. Look at credit card balances nationwide, and you'll see where a lot of that's coming
from.
Over
a trillion. So, yeah, that has something to do with it. There is one area that is coming down in price, and this is interesting. I just found this week. There's something called a new tenant repeat rent index, and it is it captures only the rents paid by new tenants, not tenants that are already in place. And so, therefore, it's more meaningful in recent data than just the rental
current
prices. Yeah. That index shows a 25% annualized decline in rents for quarter four. If you look at the chart I'm looking at, it's steady spike during COVID, then down, then another spike as inflation kicked in, and then it just falls off a cliff. So that would lead me to believe that rents are actually coming down in price.
Yeah, that's good, because it's been probably the number one contributor to the inflation rate that they're trying to get back down to 2.
Yeah.
If that component starts falling nicely, as it seems to be doing, we should not have a problem getting Fed rate cuts.
I didn't read the article, but I also saw a headline this morning that said that it is now cheaper in most cities to rent a 3-bedroom, 2-bath home than it is to buy.
Huh.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of the impact of that. My first response to that is, that's a good thing. One thing it's going to do is help bring down the interest rates.
Yeah.
You don't want purchase demand to keep exceeding the supply by all that much, or the interest rates are going to be very stubborn. So let's put that in the good news section. And I don't know that the administration has anything to do with it, but it's there.
What about rental prices? No, that's just market forces.
Right. The administration is also telling us that Americans are beating inflation with their wages.
No, that's false.
That has happened for maybe 2 months.
Yeah.
Out of over 3 years now. All right, I'm going to get back into this and sum it up right after the break, but we've got to pay some bills. This is the Banway Financial Hour.
It's the time of year when we decide to make changes in our lives. And right now, you can make the decision to get lasting relief from that awful joint pain for 2024. Hi there, it's Roger Henderson. You don't have to go another year compromising because of pain in your knees or shoulder. Call QC Kinetics. They're the nation's leader in regenerative non-surgical pain relief. Your body has what it takes to restore and repair that damaged joint tissue, and QC Kinetics can make it happen with no drug, surgery, or downtime. Tens of thousands of people all over America have had lasting relief thanks to QC Kinetics, giving people like you their lives back from pain associated with arthritis or injuries. It's not a Band-Aid solution, and it's non-surgical. Get your life back, too. Call QC Kinetics and get your free consultation on the calendar today. Call 904-274-5522. That's 904-274-5522, serving the Jacksonville area with locations in Mandarin and Ponte Vedra Beach. QC Kinetics, 904-274-5522.
America's Everglades. The water supply for more than 8 million Floridians. World-class sports fishing. Magnificent birds and wildlife unique to this region. But the Everglades today is on life support. You can help save it.
Learn more and donate today at evergladesfoundation.org.
If mortgage rates keep you from flying the coop right now, let me feather your nest instead. Hi, I'm Jeff Martin from Martin Appliance and Greystone Kitchens with your smart inflation solution. Choose our basic refresh plan, our renovation option, or a complete remodel. We feather your nest, but you choose how many feathers. Each Greystone package is designed to bring maximum return on investment. You enjoy the improvements now, get top dollar when the time is right to sell out and move up. The quicker we start, the more value you gain. We guide you every step of the way, so call now. Get the nicest nest on the branch or house on the block without having to pay the most. You've gotten appliances from Martin Appliance for years, so trust Greystone Kitchens and me to perfect your space. I'm a licensed contractor, for crying out loud. Call 213-9100, click greystonekitchens.com, or visit us at 9456 Phillips Highway.
What you see is what you get. Martin Appliance Family. Whether you know it or not, we're under attack. Being a conservative, God-fearing American is wrong. Holding traditional values is dangerous. Not here. AM 600 and 101.1 FM WBOB is the conservative voice of Jacksonville. Spend a week with us. You'll feel more encouraged. You'll feel more at home. You'll feel among friends. Things might actually start making sense again. You're welcome here. The conservative voice of Jacksonville, WBOB.
Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
I remind everybody that lines are open, 904-222-8255. We've been talking about cognitive dissonance and the big lie. And it's been a phenomenon that's been going on for some time. And the basic question kind of comes down to, if things are so darn good, why doesn't everybody feel that things are so darn good? And it has a lot to do with what actually goes on. So the administration has been claiming that wages are rising faster than inflation. And I got some numbers on that one from Mr. Kudlow also. Under Trump, Americans averaged 6.4% more real income. Now, real income to an economist simply means over and above inflation, or the opposite. In other words, inflation adjusted. But under the current administration, the average American has suffered a decrease of $6,400. In other words, you're paying $6,400 more than the inflation-adjusted cost of things. That is not a way to make people feel good, and that is the truth. So, see, we were told that the tax cuts go solely to the wealthy, but the lower brackets rose higher percentage-wise than the upper brackets for the tax cuts. And the SALT deduction limitation at $10,000 really hammered the high-income class in the high-tax states. If you're in New York or New Jersey, California, someplace, Illinois, someplace like that, and you're making $1 million, you felt it. I promise you, you did. All right, the unemployment rate, they're touting that. It's a historically low 3.5%, but what they didn't tell you was it broke 4 to the downside under Trump. Again, the COVID response bumped it back up, but the first time it was down there was under Trump. And guess who was benefiting? Women, minorities, people without college degrees, even people without high school diplomas were all benefiting with the lowest unemployment rates in history. So back to this 8%. How do you get an 8% tax and you can claim it on national TV? Well, we have also been talking for quite some time now about the concept of a wealth tax. A wealth tax means that you tax assets as they gain value without selling them. We've been on it so long that if you look back on our website through older blogs, you will find what I wrote a while back called Taxation Without Monetization. The concept of paying tax on income means that when you receive money for something, work or sale of an asset or whatever, some of that money will be paid in taxes, whatever the going rate is. But when you're forced to pay taxes and don't have the money, the court case right now that's in the Supreme Court had to do with a couple who invested overseas and made a profit, and they say that under a provision of, I think it was SECURE, that they're required to pay out a bunch of money on income, supposedly, phantom income, that was from the appreciation of their stock. And they paid it, but then they took it to court. And if the court decides this the right way, meaning they get the answer correct, correct means they agree with me, of course, but also that they write it more or less generically, the whole concept of wealth tax could go right out the window, leaving people like Joe Biden and Elizabeth Warren crying in their soup. It would be one of the greatest days of my life. You don't do that. No civilized society does that. and I still like to think that we have one. So back to the computation of the 8%. The really wealthy people probably don't pay 15% capital gains. Most of them are paying 20% capital gains, which is the max rate. But it's not the max tax on capital gains because of the Obamacare Medicare surtax of 3.8%. So in reality, the truly wealthy people on capital gains are paying 23.8%, which is higher than most people's tax rates, which most people are falling at 22% or under these days. So where do you get 8? Well, here we go. The big lie. 8% is a number that is derived from the amount of tax they actually paid to the amount of taxable income they have plus the unrealized capital gains on their assets. So if their stock goes up by $1 million, the denominator goes up by $1 million. If their house goes up 250, you add another 250 to the denominator. And by the time you put in all of this phantom income and add it to their taxable income and then divide it into the amount of tax they paid, that rate comes out at about 8%. Now, they don't tell you that, and I'm not hearing anybody talking about it or asking about it. You know that the media has absolutely fallen in, I guess, for the whole concept of the higher taxes and Biden and anti-billionaire and all that. Someone has to get out there and explain to the world why this is not only wrong, but egregiously wrong and very dangerous for society. And I thank Mr. Kudlow for being someone who did step up on that and try to set the record straight. So, said the other day, believe Marvin Gaye, says, believe none of what you hear and half of what you see. And coming out of this administration, none is about the best, in my opinion. And I am not unbiased in this, and I never claim to be, because it's just unfair, a term I hesitate to use. All right, Adam, you got anything you want to talk about?
Yeah. Would you believe me if I said that the average 50-year-old household now has a seven-figure net worth? So the average 50-year-old household is a millionaire.
Wow.
It's true.
Now, contrary to popular opinion in some circles, I find that to be a very, very good thing.
It is. And the majority of that wealth is made up of the value in your home, your equity, and your 401k. And the average net worth of 50 to 54-year-olds is $1.132 million. And if you're age 55 to 59, that rises to $1.442 million. That's pretty good.
No kidding.
However,
there had to be a but on this one.
Yeah. The median net worth in your early 50s, $272,800. The median net worth in your later 50s, $320,700. So
simply means there are as many people below it as above it.
Right. So the problem is there's still a ton of people who haven't done anything or very little. And then there's a few who are very, very wealthy pulling up that average. But when you look at the median number, the numbers are so much lower. And that's just a function of the amount of people who haven't done as much. And that's really sad.
It is.
By your late 50s, having $320,000 of net worth, probably not going to cut it unless you're getting a big inheritance.
A lot of people now are counting on inheritance. And, you know, our old motto, it's never good to count on an inheritance.
No, definitely not.
You can plan for one. If somebody says you're going to inherit some money, fine, come talk to us right away. We'll tell you how to preserve, protect, and defend it. But yeah, don't plan on it as your retirement plan. It's no different than going out to Publix and buying a lotto ticket because so many people have won at Publix these days.
Yeah. This is good, too. In the 20s, between 20 and 24, the average net worth, $121,000. For the late 20s, it actually falls slightly to $120,000. But
that's not hard to understand.
kids.
Yeah.
Mainly kids.
Yeah. It's like the kids. All the things that are pulling at you.
Yeah. And the median net worth in your 20s, early 20s, $10,800. Late 20s, it actually rises to $30,160. So, so even though the average falls slightly, the median triples. Mm. So that's pretty good.
Yeah. Although it's a pretty low number.
But you got to, I mean, in my early 20s, I wasn't worth $10,000. I had nothing. I mean, yeah. I owned my car, maybe.
Me too.
So that was it.
Yeah. I remember I got married when I was 22, and I would have rubbed two nickels together if somebody would loan me one.
Yeah. I think when I left for grad school, I had a car worth $3,000, $4,000, and $2,000 in my 401k. So that, yeah, $5,000 in net worth.
Hmm.
I mean, that's when you start with nothing, it takes a while to accumulate something.
Yeah, and unfortunately, it's those very years where if you get started on the saving, like
yeah.
your little 401k,
yeah.
that's the kind of thing that's going to bail you out in
oh, no,
30
I,
years.
I cashed that out to pay for grad school.
So, well, of course, yeah. in your position. But that's what happens in your 20s. You got so many things conflicting. We see people frequently in the office who are in that situation where they have so many conflicts of their own personal interest. They got X amount of money and X plus whatever number of demands for it, from houses and kids and insurance and transportation and on and on and on. And